Some fat is unhealthy and painful, a driver of inflammation throughout the body, but it's mostly the belly fat, the visceral fat tucked around your organs like foam packing peanuts. And yet, not all belly fat is bad, and not all obesity is unhealthy. Some people with high body mass indexes are just fine, while others with a low BMI are still at risk. That's the obesity paradox. Usually they're still at risk despite the low BMI because they have too much belly fat specifically. Like any other tissue, fat is complex and lively stuff, and it can be healthy or unhealthy depending on genes, life, and midnight snacks. The harder you push your luck by consuming too many calories, the more likely you are to trigger trouble. Extra visceral fat is the most likely to be stressed and oozing inflammatory signals, which drags the liver into the equation because it's right there, which in turn throws the whole system off kilter. And so belly fat is strongly linked to poor health, including roughly double the risk of chronic pain. Obesity is more metabolically relevant to pain than biomechanically. These facts have been coming into focus over the years, and I've dipped a toe into this topic a few times before, like that 2024 paper about the extremely impressive effects of semaglutide, Ozempic, on arthritis. That's one of the best good news stories I've published in years. Belly fat hurts is not a complicated bottom line, but it is resting on a bunch of challenging science. My name is Paul Ingram of painscience.com, and this is the PainSci Updates podcast. For today's episode, I will be breaking down two new papers that add to that foundation. Paper number one, obesity as a metabolic disease, but not in everyone. This first paper is by Matthias Blua. It's a state of the science overview of obesity complications. It's got just the one author, and it's in a minor journal, but it harmonizes very well with other recent papers like Busetto et al. In Nature Medicine in 2024. That's a much more prestigious journal, a huge impact factor. And Blua focuses more on the biological story, which is what interests me. This is just a straight-up translation of Blua's technical overview into something much shorter and more accessible for patients and clinicians. The most important development in obesity science over the last couple decades is that we now know that fat mass alone does not explain why obesity is sometimes dangerous, because fat can be metabolically healthy or unhealthy. It's not just the quantity, it's the quality, according to Blua. Consider two people, both carrying quite a few extra pounds, but one of them's fine, and the other is not. We're not used to thinking about obesity like that. Unhealthy fat cells are themselves fat, stretched to the limit of their storage capacity, and stressed by it. And so they start to struggle, just like any tissue failing under strain. They bloat, they get hypoxic, they leak fatty acids, they summon immune cells, which makes them inflamed, and more. And this reminds me of how some people's tendons get all cruddy and hurdy under strain, while others just don't. But tendonitis doesn't cause trouble anywhere else, and fat definitely does. Abdominal or visceral fat is particularly dangerous because it's those fat cells that tend to get overloaded and stressed, and they are metabolically hyperactive and anatomically positioned to do more harm. They are plugged right into vital organs, directly connected to them by plumbing. The venous drainage for the visceral fat drains into the portal vein, which goes straight to the liver, which then also gets inflamed and triggers a cascade of systemic problems like insulin resistance and vascular disease at the very least. Whether fat goes bad depends on how well it can adapt to energy surplus over time. Some people's underskin fat can keep making new adipocytes and new capillaries, safely storing surplus energy. Others can't, and they run out of subcutaneous fat capacity sooner. So other fat cells, chiefly the visceral ones, the main backup system, get into trouble sooner. That capacity to adapt, whether or not the subcutaneous fat can handle the load, is shaped by genetics, sex hormones, and early life influences and development. A bunch of stuff that is out of our control. But the thing to do with the bad fat is to get rid of it. We do have control over that. Notoriously easier said than done, of course. But diet, exercise, surgery, and medications, all effective to varying degrees, and substantial weight loss can eliminate the danger and even reverse damage already done. Although all of this is on good scientific footing, it's also all quite new still. BMI, as a measurement, continues to be used as the main basis for diagnosing obesity, even in obesity clinics. Not all obesity clinics, of course. There's plenty of specialists who take a more nuanced approach, but it's surprisingly common for healthcare professionals who probably should know better to think of obesity exclusively in terms of overall BMI. Recent formal redefinitions of obesity diagnosis that go beyond BMI exist precisely because too many doctors are still leaning too hard on BMI. Paper number two, visceral fat is guilty by association with pain. BMI and waist circumference can't tell visceral fat from fat under your skin, and even less so with age. A newer index, the Metabolic Score for Visceral Fat, METSVF, is designed to score visceral fatness based on fasting glucose, triglycerides, HDL, cholesterol, BMI, waist-to-height ratio, age, sex, and probably how your pants fit. So Zhu et al. Tested METSVF. Does it predict greater odds of chronic pain? Does it predict it better than BMI? Does systemic inflammation help to explain any association between those things? And they had data on almost 6,000 people. It was curiously old data, practically vintage from the early 2000s. It shouldn't make too much difference. Demographics and culture have certainly changed since then, but I would hope not so much that it would make this data worthless. But it is surprisingly old. About 860 of those 6,000 reported that they had chronic pain. And they did have more belly fat, more METSVF, bigger BMI, wider waists. And more belly fat, the top quartile of obesity, had nearly double the odds of chronic pain. That's nothing like the 4 times greater risk of diabetes with obesity, or the 10 times risk of mesothelioma from asbestos exposure. But it's enough to take seriously. It's in the same league as the link between secondhand smoke and lung cancer, or the link between poor sleep and hypertension, or the link between sedentariness and mortality, all well-established lifestyle health risks. The rest of the results from this paper were disappointing, though. The fancy METSVF score had no more power to predict pain than BMI and waist size, with the exception of a slight edge with older people where BMI is most likely to fail. So maybe a little bit of utility there. Also, belly fat isn't particularly good at predicting who will get chronic pain, however it is measured. It's somewhat better than random chance, but also far from clinically powerful. This means that it's useful in research with big groups, but knowing your METSVF score or your BMI, that's not useful as a diagnostic test for individuals. It's not going to tell you who is going to get chronic pain. It's going to tell you that they've got higher odds, but not that much higher and not that strong a prediction. The link between belly fat and pain was also not clearly correlated with inflammation. This is cross-sectional data, slice-of-time data, so in principle it can't tell us how the link between fat and pain works. But you can sometimes find hints this way. Not this time, though. This is not a surprise when you've only got the roughest possible measure of inflammation. That's the only data they had on inflammation from this data set. They had CRP, or C-reactive protein, numbers, and that is a very blunt instrument, like trying to put together a puzzle with oven mitts on. despite a lot of advances, it is still early days on this topic, and Zhu et al. Got us closer with a lot of numbers and some good number crunching. They did confirm a strong association between belly fat and pain, and that's the main thing here. It's hard to get much more out of old cross-sectional data on self-reported pain, and CRP is the only biomarker for inflammation. But the fat pain link is solidly in good-to-know territory. So I've been immersed in this topic for a couple of days now. It's practically all I've done for the last 48 hours. This and sleep. I've already integrated these citations into my plantar fasciitis book, where it's surprisingly relevant. People with bilateral plantar fasciitis, as I learned from another paper that I dug into in detail recently, they tend to struggle the most. And that's likely because there's a systemic health issue that affects both feet, like both mechanical and metabolic strain from obesity, for instance. So the plantar fasciitis book has been updated, and in fact, it's been updated many times recently. It's in particularly good shape right now. So if you've been thinking, maybe I should buy that plantar fasciitis book of Paul Ingram's, this is a good time to do it. Next up, I will also add these citations to my article about systemic vulnerability to chronic pain and inflammation, subtle systemic inflammation. And then several more books, because it never ends. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.